Hello and welcome to the SS&C Alps Advisors 14ers podcast. I'm Paul Baiocchi, Chief ETF Strategist at SS&C Alps Advisors, and I am fortunate to be joined by Kevin Baum. Kevin, welcome.
Paul, thank you. It's a privilege to be with someone with your breadth and depth of market knowledge. So I'm looking forward to talking commodities in today's discussion.
Yeah, it's good to be here in person. Kevin and I are in the Rendezvous studio here at the SS&C Alps Advisors office in downtown Denver. And Kevin, if you would, maybe just give me a little bit of background on how you came to be in the role focused on commodities.
Sure, Paul. Well, you know, I knew I wanted to be in the industry going back to high school. Worked for Edward Jones as a after school job for a couple of years. And, you know, the family business was commodities. So it was kind of natural that I would end up in the ETF world or the asset management world more generally. And spent 20 years at Oppenheimer Funds as head of commodities and alternatives, and then had a similar role over at Invesco or Invesco Power Shares for a shorter period of time before joining USCF about 8 years ago. So it's kind of the perfect marriage of my 30-year commodity background, you know, landing at a commodity boutique where we focus on alternatives, but more specifically commodity products.
That's awesome. And I think the term commodities can be somewhat nebulous for the uninitiated. And I guess it's always important from my perspective to level set before we get into the nitty gritty here as to why commodities? What do they do to advisor portfolios? Why are they important? And why do you think they're such a critical asset allocation component?
Yeah, it's a great question, a great way to start the discussion, Paul. So by commodities, we're talking about, you know, real assets, things you can touch, you can feel, you can consume. So energy, agriculture, metals is, you know, what we're talking about. And specifically, we're focused primarily on dollar for dollar exposure to commodities through our products rather than the equities of commodity producers. And the reason we think that they're so important to your question about their place in a portfolio is that, you know, they offer return potential, long-term returns that are similar to the equity market. But importantly, Paul, as you well know, the timing of those returns is very different than what you'll find in the stock or the bond market. So that lack of correlation brings diversification to a multi-asset portfolio. So we think they should be an evergreen or a strategic allocation for people.
And so when people think about commodities, physical goods in the sense of the oil in a barrel, the gasoline coming out of the gas station where they fill up their car, there's a distinction between those physical commodities and how you actually get access to commodities markets through futures or otherwise. Can you maybe speak to that mechanically in terms of how the difference between the on-the-ground, tangible, real-world experience of interfacing and interacting with commodities might differ from how you go about deploying investment capital in commodities?
Great point, Paul. And to be sure, I'm glad you brought up gasoline. That's a perfect example. And again, the use case for commodities, not only are you going to get long-term return potential from commodities, but it's allowing you to hedge the costs that you experience in your day-to-day lives. An allocation of commodities, if commodity prices are going up, you're benefiting in your portfolio from that, where you may be paying more for gasoline at the pump or more for the groceries that you're buying in the grocery store. Now, as you mentioned, you're not doing that by owning physical barrels of oil or gasoline or what have you. It's not practical to do that and to store those commodities. It's expensive. It's cumbersome. You know, it's just not the way an investor would gain an allocation. So instead, you use investment products, in our case, exchange traded products. And the underliers in those products are futures contracts, just as you mentioned. But I think the important point here, Paul, is that while, you know, the instruments may sound a little bit different, we're talking about futures contracts backed by treasury bills, typically, rather than owning stocks or bonds. The important point is that for every dollar an investor puts into most of these products, they're getting $1 of exposure to those commodities. So, you know, no leverage, nothing more complicated than that.
Yeah. And the most important dynamic in the market right now seems to be the level or trajectory of inflation. And commodities are often thought about in the context of an inflation hedge. But to the point you've made from the beginning of this conversation, and as we've talked offline about commodities, it isn't just about inflation. And you think about core CPI, you think about headline CPI, you think about the PCE, you think about PPI. Those are all impacted by the level of commodities as an input in the case of wholesale inflation, and certainly as it translates to consumer level inflation. But the real world macroeconomic backdrop has a really large impact on this. And so as we maybe pivot toward the outlook for commodities based on your research and on your experience, how has your outlook for commodities in 2024 evolved based on the macro, the geopolitical, and of course, tied to that, the inflationary backdrop?
Yeah, Paul, you've tied all of that together beautifully, because you're right. You know, we talked earlier about the timing of returns to commodities being different to that of stocks and bonds. And that happens because of the link of commodities to the macroeconomic business cycle. And, you know, you mentioned that. But in addition to those returns and that diversification property, we have the inflation hedge, and that potential from commodities is really important. You know, we've just been through a wave of inflation that I think brought this front and center for investors and advisors. Again, oftentimes when we talk about inflation, geopolitical hedges, you know, those are things that can be out of sight, out of mind for investors and advisors until they're not. And again, we've just experienced that with inflation. And to your point, we're now experiencing that in the geopolitical realm. It's very prominent in the news cycle, whether we're talking about Russia, whether we're talking about the Middle East. In fact, just this morning, Paul, one of the chief policymakers at the ECB was on the tape saying that the biggest threat to the ECB actually cutting rates this year are geopolitical developments. Well, what is an asset class that can actually benefit and see prices increase because of these geopolitical events? Commodities is one of the few. So, you know, it has a very important role in helping diversify portfolios against these risks. And that certainly fed into the way our outlook for 2024 has evolved, which we could talk more about.
Yeah, and I think that's what's so fascinating about the geopolitical backdrop is we're less than 4 months into 2024. We came into the year expecting some geopolitical uncertainty on the back of the ongoing conflict in Ukraine, as well as some bubbling up, if you want to call it that, of tensions in the Middle East. And then as the year has gone on, we've had increasing, it feels, an acute conflict bubbling up in the Middle East, including, of course, the attack on the consulate in Damascus. We've now more recently seen an unprecedented attack by Iran on Israel. We've also now seen, at least globally, some uncertainty around who's aligning with who as it relates to lining up in those various challenges. And so from that perspective, is your 2024 outlook as fluid as that geopolitical backdrop seems to be?
Yeah, I appreciate you tying all that together. We came into the year, Paul, our 2024 outlook on our website would show that we were looking at things in three time horizons. Our short-term time horizon was focused on the energy markets. The reason for that being OPEC had been cutting production. The oil market, we thought, fundamentally was improving and looking very healthy. Then you had that backdrop of the Hamas attacks on Israel back in October of last year, which, you know, we thought just brought the geopolitical risk to the forefront and forced you to think about energy as a dominant commodity sector for early 2024. Our medium-term outlook transitioned more to metals, so things like aluminum, copper, nickel, et cetera, that to your point are very tied to the economy. So as the economy grows, so too does the demand for these metals. But I think the other impetus there was the energy transition and, you know, the huge demand that you have for all of these metals, not just aluminum, copper, nickel, but things like cobalt, lithium, et cetera, that was going to give a demand impetus to the metal space with a long-term view to specifically things like battery metals. That energy transition, we think, is one of the mega trends of the next couple of decades. It's already well underway, of course. And, you know, whether it's electric vehicles, renewable energy, or even just the build out of the power grid, that's extremely metals intensive. So that's the way we were looking at 2024 and our short, medium, long term outlook. And then to your point, Paul, as the geopolitical landscape has evolved, we think it's only amplified these dynamics. You just mentioned some very important points. The Middle East, I mean, we have to start there. And now that Iran, as you suggested, is being pulled more directly into this conflict, they're not only a major oil producer, but don't forget, they sit right on the Persian Gulf. They've harassed tankers. They've boarded tankers in the past. It's been happening more recently. You know, the fear in our markets, Paul, has always been that Iran, if they were more directly involved, could someday start laying mines around the Strait of Hormuz, which, you know, 20% of the world's petroleum flows through that strait on a daily basis. You know, these are major, major risk factors, hence the comments you heard from the ECB this morning and why it's so prominent in the news cycle. So again, it hasn't really changed our views for 2024. I think, Paul, we would suggest that it's really amplified our views. And again, we're not even talking about Russia and the metal sanctions that you alluded to that were announced on Friday. The geopolitical landscape has changed dramatically in recent months.
Well, I'm so glad you brought up the energy transition because it's one of my favorite topics, and we agree wholeheartedly on the importance of that secular trend to investment portfolios. And I do think, and we at ALPS do support some renewable energy strategies that focus on the equity side, but I think a lot of investors think about these things in binary terms. They think about renewable energy companies, and so the wind, the solar providers, even the EV providers, and they don't necessarily think about all of the components of that energy transition, including the raw materials that are going to be needed, the increased demand, and the pressure that's putting on those markets because of a restricted supply side for some of those key components, rare earths and beyond, that are going to be part and parcel to not just the build out of batteries and storage technology, but also the electrification of the economy, supporting of the build out of the grid and the copper and the aluminum and all of the various components that are going to be required to build that out. And so thinking about commodities along different time frames is another piece of what you said that I really take away, in the sense that you do have the near term geopolitical and macroeconomic dynamics that are going to affect prices. You do have the medium term impact of the cycle, but then you have these secular trends that are going to impact these various commodities differently. And so I think it's a nice segue into the conversation about a basket approach to commodities for advisors in particular, as opposed to, say, trying to pick that individual hot dot, as it were. And so people think about commodities, as we talked about, and often they think about crude oil or gasoline, and those do tend to dominate a lot of the indexes that measure the commodity space. But also importantly, I think when you look at something like cocoa rallying as much as it has, some advisors might go out and try and invest and target that individual commodity individually. And I think that can be a really challenging thing to do and to get that right. But from your perspective, why is a basket approach important? And then as a sort of follow-on to that, how do you think about commodities indexes? Are there inherent flaws in how most of them are constructed?
Yeah, there's a lot of meat on that bone, Paul, and a lot of topics we could cover. But let me tie together two things you brought up. I loved your comments about the energy transition and different ways to approach that secular trend or that thematic. At ALPS, you guys have a suite of products that I really like, and some that are a bit more downstream, right, in terms of the exposures that they offer investors. Tremendous opportunities, great long-term investment opportunities, in my opinion. Just as you suggested, at USCF Investments, we tend to go a bit more upstream. So, we have a product that that is a basket approach to the metals and minerals that are needed for that energy transition. And I think the important thing here, Paul, is that these products can complement each other. It's almost as if you're diversifying the diversifier. You think about the upstream lithium prices, for instance. They don't correlate very highly with the price of Tesla's stock or of a battery maker's stock. And so, I think if you're interested in that energy transition thematic, which we believe everyone should be thinking about as a long-term investment opportunity, we think these types of products can complement each other very nicely. Now, to your point about commodity indexes, I think this is critical. If you take a traditional stock or bond kind of peer universe or peer group, you think about different indexes within those areas, there's not a lot of dispersion typically in terms of the returns that you're going to see from one large cap equity index versus another large cap equity index. In the commodity universe, very different. The dispersion can be enormous. And the reason is, just as you suggested, most of the traditional kind of legacy commodity indexes were production weighted. So, you know, how much oil is produced every year, how much wheat is produced every year, and that feeds into the weighting scheme of that index. You know, think of it almost as a market cap approach, if you will, in the equity world. What we think people need to do, though, is look beyond that, because, again, that dispersion you see in commodities, you know, various commodity prices can be moving up while others are moving down. You know, there are some common drivers like the economy that you mentioned earlier, but there are also some unique factors. You know, weather may impact certain commodities more than others. You know, growth in a certain area may impact metals more than they do livestock, for instance. So we think the thoughtful way to approach the commodity space is to use an intelligent index, if you will, a factor-based approach that helps you identify potential winners and losers, you know, based on the fundamental properties that are setting up in those individual commodities. And, you know, you mentioned cocoa. We could look at the underperformance this year of natural gas. And having an index or a benchmark that can navigate that landscape to choose which commodities to own in any given month, or not own in a given month, just as importantly, can result in just huge performance variances, you know, versus those legacy indexes. And we've seen that over the last, you know, 4 months, 12 months, 36 months. And we're really, really pleased to be able to report, you know, that there has been big dispersion in the commodity space. And we hope that advisors will really do their homework and look into that.
Yeah. And I think that's it's a great point, because it's germane not just to commodities. This idea that moving off of the quote unquote benchmark can, and in some cases should, lead to strong relative risk adjusted performance. So when we think about the equity space, and we talk a lot about small and mid caps, the sort of typical allocation for an advisor in their small cap orientation is just to buy the Russell 2000 or the S&P 600, a cap weighted index that just gives you measurement of that universe. It was measured, or was designed to be a measurement tool, not necessarily investable. And we know that a large portion of small caps aren't profitable. There's a lot of debt there, much of which is floating rate and can be problematic in the type of environment that we're in. And so we advise advisors to move off of that cap weighted view of the market. In fixed income, the ag or benchmarks like it are valuated and akin to a market cap weighted index. And one of the things Rob Arnott at RAFI always talks about is sort of economic footprint of your cap weighted benchmarks and the inherent flaws in cap weighting. And so I think taking this idea of the market, the measurement tool, not being the best way to invest in that segment of the market is a really critical idea for advisors thinking about allocations. And certainly as it relates to commodities, given that we've had a really broad discussion here, it might be worth just honing in on one of the commodities people are talking a lot about right now and that people are thinking a lot about right now and don't necessarily even think about as a commodity, which is gold. And we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about it. So I'd love to get your thoughts.
Well, yeah, I appreciate you bringing this up, because indeed it is on advisors' minds, not just advisors' minds, frankly, central bankers' minds. We're seeing, you know, a bid for gold, and some of that is because, again, people are looking to diversify their portfolios against this geopolitical risk that we're seeing in the markets today. You know, we're seeing, again, central bankers, though, wanting to diversify, you know, their holdings. And so gold has been in demand, you know, from these sovereigns as well. So yeah, we think, you know, gold has a place in a portfolio, whether that is as, you know, a holding within a broad-based commodity basket or as a standalone investment for investors. Again, it has, you know, unique properties, a little bit different than the typical commodity. In fact, I'd welcome your thoughts on the gold landscape as we talk today, just given your extensive background in that area.
Yeah, so gold's really interesting because, to your point, there are industrial uses for it, but those are typically overblown by gold bulls because gold is used in electronic components, and there is a sort of baseline of demand for it. But when you look globally at the application of flows into gold, it's not typically for those industrial uses. And if you were going to value gold specifically on its industrial uses, I don't know that it would be north of $2,000 an ounce. Agreed. I don't know what that level would be, but it certainly has these other components, like to your point, a monetary hedge and the view is of hard money, at least historically. I also think that there is a cohort of investors that view gold as a hedge against societal breakdown, which in theory, if you're using an exchange traded fund to affect that view, that's problematic, because unless you drive to the vault in London and make a claim for the gold that they're holding on your behalf, I don't know how much it's good it's going to do you in that type of sort of Armageddon scenario. But what's interesting to me is the mismatch between what we're seeing central banks do, specifically China, in terms of replacing some of their reserves in things like treasuries with physical gold, and what we've seen from a creation perspective in gold-based ETFs. We haven't seen an avalanche of flows right into gold ETFs. And so there does seem to be a mismatch between what's happening from a macroeconomic and central bank perspective and the demand that's bubbling up at a institutional or institutional plus level and what's actually happening on the ground level.
Right. And I think some of that ground level demand has probably been substituted over to crypto, right? And we've certainly seen flows there. I'm not pro or anti-crypto. I think the point that I would simply make is, I don't buy the view that crypto and gold are interchangeable. I don't think the data supports that view. Crypto's kind of a high beta, risk on, risk off type of asset, where gold, tends to step to the beat of its own drummer. And certainly is not correlated with the equity markets. And so, we think that there's different use cases for those investments. But I think your point is valid. And it does, kind of beg a question of, hey, what are the central banks doing and thinking? Should investors be, staying attuned to those flows?
This is great. I appreciate you so much, Kevin, for stopping by and having a discussion that I think is going to be really valuable for advisors. So, Kevin Baum, CIO at USCF, always great to see you. Thanks for the time today.
Paul, a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. This has been a SS&C Alps Advisors 14ers podcast. As always, thank you so much for joining us. Visit alpsfunds.com for all things Alps. Take care.